Episode number 28 of the podcast brought to you by First Row Collectibles. Head on over to firstrow.ca and use the promo code FNP at checkout for free shipping on your order today. Also brought to you by Sisu Mouthguards. Head on over to their website. It's sisuguard.com and use the promo code FNP10 at checkout for 10% off your order.
Ladies and gentlemen, recorded in Fredericton, New Brunswick, Canada. It's time for the Fight Night Picks podcast with your host, Craig Allen.
It's Friday, July 13th. I told you, I got two episodes coming out at the end of this week. There's a lot of news to go over, and there's great events this weekend, so let's get right into it. All right, episode number 28 of the podcast. So yesterday, if you didn't catch it, we had Jose Youngs on from Fansided, and we went over the UFC Boise card, pretty much top to bottom, picked out some of the more entertaining fights. I mean, probably the most entertaining fight on that card is going to be Darren Elkins and Volkanovski. I mean, two guys that like to swing. Volkanovski's on a 14-fight win streak. Darren Elkins has been in the UFC for the longest time. And with his recent win over Michael Johnson, he's really trending upwards for sure. And he should have been a lock to be on the main card of this event. But in today's episode, we're going to have an interview with Zubair Asgar. He's CEO of Impact Sports Productions down in St. John, New Brunswick. And Zubair and I are going to talk about the event that he's putting on coming up in August. That's August 25th. And it's titled FA7 Legends Fighting Alliance. So, he's bringing Fighting Alliance over from Pakistan. And he's put on great events in the past over there. Some of the fighters have gone on to fight in bigger promotions such as ONE FC. So we're going to have a conversation with Zubair. We're also going to bring on Ty O'Keefe, friend of the show. And Ty and I are going to break down Bellator 202 and 203. We're going to give our analysis. I mean, you've got two great cards there. Main event tonight, you got Talita Nogueira taking on Julia Budd for the women's featherweight title. And at the same time, you've also got Patricio Pitbull, and he's fighting Daniel Weichel tomorrow at Bellator 203 from Rome. And at the same time, Bellator is also going to have quite a few kickboxing fights on that card. So they're going to split it MMA and kickboxing. And if you're into that sort of thing, that's what they're going for. So without further ado, let's get into the interview with Zubair, and we'll talk about FA7. Today we're joined by Zubair Asgar. He's CEO of Impact Sports Productions and the man responsible for bringing MMA to St. John. Zubair, how are you today?
I'm good, thank you very much.
Yes. How are you? Not too bad. So a lot of people in New Brunswick, they might not be familiar with the brand, but I mean, Fighting Alliance has been around for quite some time. You got your start in Pakistan. So how did you get involved with Fighting Alliance, and what made you bring the brand over to St. John, New Brunswick?
Okay, bit of a long story, but I'll try and keep it short. Once upon a time, I trained in martial arts when I was younger. I got myself a black belt in Pakistan as well, and the unfortunate thing was I never got to compete to see how good I was. So I lost heart in doing martial arts, but then one particular dude came over to Pakistan, American Pakistani, his name was Bashir Ahmed. We nicknamed him the godfather of MMA in Pakistan. And he tried to start a movement, and he started kids getting excited about mixed martial arts. And whilst I was away at university, in my absence, they started actually Fighting Alliance. And the idea was it was supposed to be by fighters for fighters.
Okay.
But the problem with that is fighters fight. They can't usually organize. That's what I say. So they did one event in 2013. They did one event in 2014. And then they stopped. So I had come back to Pakistan again. I stepped out of the country again. I came back to Pakistan. And I thought, screw it, I'll start organizing events myself. I did low-level events, local events, national events, and it got to the point where the fighters saw what I was doing. In like a year, I'd done 3-4 events. They said, give him Fighting Alliance. So they gave it to me. I took it over. And in a year, I did four international and 2 national events. And the problem was, though, that Fighting Alliance was not growing in Pakistan simply because it wasn't getting the traction that it needed. The way the economy works over there was no sponsorships over there, and there were false promises of sponsorships. Unfortunately, that's how it works in the developing world. So after that, I thought there's only one way for it to grow, is to take it abroad. I didn't want to go back to the UK because of Brexit, was screwing up the economy over there. And the next best thing I figured is Canada is looking for people to promote sports and culture. So here I am.
Awesome. I mean, you couldn't have picked a better city. St. John's definitely, it's a fight town for sure. There's a lot of boxing history there, as well as MMA. And it'll be great to have an event there. So events taking place August 25th at the LBR. I think doors open at 7. What can we expect from the first Fighting Alliance event in St. John? I know there's three fights, I believe, announced on Tapology right now, if you go on the page for the event. But what will we see out of Fighting Alliance in this first event?
All right, so the first Fighting Alliance, I mean, the only difference between this MMA event or the other MMA event is, of course, my personal touch. So, what do you call it? We already have, like, 3 to 4 professional fights lined up.
Yep.
I understand that usually people only have, like, 2 professional fights. I'm trying to make it 3 or 4. And on top of that, you've seen on Topology, we've got a Brit and we've got an Icelander coming over. So they're going to hope, if everything goes well, they're going to co-main and main event the night. And what I tried to do my hardest was to make this, because I want this to be a regular thing in St. John. St. John is kind of hungry for events.
Yeah.
Like you said, it's a fight city. It's got a bit of a history when it comes to fighting. But events in general are kind of piss poor over here. Last year, people have been telling me nothing's been really happening. Then this year, slowly but surely, events kind of picked up. And with me, my target is I want this event to happen every 3 to 4 months.
Yep.
So this Fighting Alliance is basically to show the city. I mean, I don't even have any strong sponsorships for this one. The guys who are sponsoring me, they're kind of subsidizing their rates quite a lot, and I'm grateful for that. But technically, that's not like a full-on sponsorship, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, if I can give them a shout-out without infringing on your...
By all means.
Port City Production, they're the guys who are doing all the lights and the sound, and Vegas Entertainment Center, Bar and Grill. So the Vegas is right next to the venue, LBR,
yeah.
And they're helping a lot with the catering side of things. And of course, they're the guys who are going to do the canteen, if you like, where all the drinks will be available. Now, the problem is, like I said, this for me is surely going to be kind of like a showcase to show everybody that I am serious about this sport. This is the number one priority for me. This is why I'm in Canada, full stop. That's what we're expecting, just purely for me to show that it can be done and I can do it.
Yeah, I mean, that's wonderful. Vegas, for sure. Shout out to them. It's a great eatery, great place to go. A couple of spots there in St. John. And yeah, I mean, this Fighting Alliance event, it's definitely going to be a great one for the city. And I'm really looking forward to covering it and being down in St. John to watch the fights. And it's awesome, like you said, that you're going to have more than just a couple of professional fights on the card, as well as some international fighters. So really looking forward to the event, covering it, and wish you nothing but the best. And hopefully, you know, we'll have you back on before the event takes place.
Okay, awesome. Well, thanks a lot for giving me a call, mate.
Great to have Zubair on the podcast. I mean, I'm really excited to be covering the FA7 Legends card live there in August. And it should be a really good event. Like I said, on Tapology, if you have a look there, there's a few international fighters coming in so far. I think they have 4 fights booked right now. And looking at having, you know, more professional fights than your average regional card. So should be a great event if you're in and around, you know, the New England and Eastern Canadian regions. Definitely have a lookout for this card. So right now, I'd like to take a second to thank my sponsors. We're brought to you today by First Row Collectibles from Winnipeg, Manitoba. We had Curtis Housen on, you know, he runs First Row. We had him on quite a while ago, talked about wrestling and MMA. And if you head on over to the website at firstrow.ca, make sure you use the promo code FNP at checkout for free shipping on your order. They've got wrestling memorabilia, MMA memorabilia, hockey cards, baseball cards, old issues of Sports Illustrated from the 60s. The list goes on. And, you know, it's a great company out there from Manitoba. And to our American listeners, keep in mind, I mean, you're going to be saving roughly 25% if you order, as the prices on the website, they're all Canadian dollars. So head on over to firstrow.ca, use promo code FNP at checkout for free shipping on your order today. We're also brought to you by Sisu Mouthguards, and I've had a Sisu Mouthguard for a number of years now. Broke my front tooth when I didn't wear my mouthguard playing hockey. Regretted it ever since. When it gets cold, that tooth hurts. So If you head on over to their website, it's sisuguard.com. You can use the promo code FNP10 at checkout and you'll save 10% on your order. And they're proud to announce that from June of this year until June of next year, they partnered with Alex's Lemonade Stand Foundation, which is a national childhood cancer research foundation. And a bit of the proceeds from the sale of every yellow mouth guard in either Aero or Junior styles will go towards the foundation. So if you head on over to their website, you can still use the promo code FNP10 at checkout. You'll save 10%. And at the same time, they're going to give a 10% donation to Alex's Lemonade Stand Foundation. So make sure you go out there and you buy a yellow mouth guard from Sisu. All right. So now we're going to be joined by, you know, Fansided's and Fight Network's Ty O'Keefe. We're going to break down Bellator 202, 203, and we might give our thoughts just a bit more on the UFC Boise card, because I've got a feeling, you know, we're kind of, like Jose Young said yesterday, we're kind of feeling a little bit of a hangover from International Fight Week, and there's not as much attention being paid to these really good cards that are coming up this weekend. So, here's Ty.
All right.
You and I, we're going to break down Bellator 202. We're going to spend a little bit of time on it, just where it's tonight. We're not going to focus too much on it. We're going to preview Bellator 203 from tomorrow. You know, you've got the kickboxing as well as the MMA. We're just going to focus on the MMA. You know, kickboxing there, it's kind of hit or miss sometimes. So we'll take our time with the MMA as well. We'll kind of get into some of the matchups that you're focusing on with UFC Boise. There's a lot of storylines going into it. It's kind of been an overlooked card, I would say, just with the hangover of International Fight Week from last week. So we'll get into 202. It's airing tonight. It's at 9 p.m. Eastern. It's no tape delay there. And then the prelims are going to start as far as Eastern. I think they start at 7 o'clock Eastern. And there's one prelim that I'm interested in. It was kind of a short notice fight, but you've got 25-6 former guest of the show, Gerald Harris, and he's making his return to welterweight. And he made weight. I think he weighed in at 170.5, taking on unbeaten Ukrainian prospect in Yaroslav Amosov, who's 19-0. And it's kind of a tough fight, really, to try and preview. I mean, Gerald Harris, he's got a great record. In his last fight, it was on short notice against Rafael Lovato Jr., and he lost by submission, which was his first submission loss on his record. But it was a catchweight bout. I think it was on, like, 4 days' notice or something crazy. Like, but it netted him a Bellator contract. So
yeah, and that's the thing. Gerald Harris, at that point, really needed to just catch on somewhere.
Yeah.
Because he absolutely deserves to be fighting in either the UFC or Bellator. Like you said, it's hard to gauge what we're going to see from his opponent. I mean, Harris is obviously experienced, but we haven't seen too much from his opponent. And I don't, you know, I think at this point, Harris definitely needs to come out there, make an impression.
Yeah.
And he needs to make an impression, not only because it's the beginning of his Bellator run, but because with this welterweight Grand Prix around the corner, there are some spots that you could argue are still up for grabs.
Yep.
And if Gerald Harris makes an impression, there's no reason to believe that he wouldn't maybe slide into the seventh or eighth spot. And that welterweight Grand Prix, especially coming off of what I would call at least the mild success of the heavyweight Grand Prix, that welterweight Grand Prix not only showcases their deepest division, but it's going to be a lot more popular coming off the heavyweight success. So I think that it's a huge opportunity, not just for, you know, defeating this opponent. This is a big kind of make or break fight for Harris, and it's going to determine the path he goes down for the next year. Because I really think if he wins and wins decisively, we could see him in that tournament.
Yeah,
and obviously that'll change things huge for Gerald Harris. I mean, that'll make big difference for his career.
For sure. I mean, the thing for me that kind of worries me a little bit was when he was on the podcast, he said that, you know, when he had agreed with Bellator on this new deal, all the fights were going to be at middleweight. He wasn't going to have to cut down to welterweight anymore.
Yeah.
He said, I'm too old for it, whatever.
Go for it.
All right, so the odds for this fight, I mean, like I had kind of mentioned, it's minus 290 for Amosov. Harris is a plus 210 underdog. And, I mean, he's finally getting a full camp for a fight, which is it's great for him. And hopefully we're able to see a win out of him. I really think that he's going to be able to win this fight. I mean, Amosov, 19-0, and that's great. And he's got 17 finishes. But at the same time, he most recently fought for Tech Crep in Russia.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty deep into the Russian MMA scene. And he's ranked number 10 welterweight in all of Russia on Tapology, which is great. But I've never heard of Tech Crep in my life. I mean, RCC's as deep as I get, and that's where Alexander Emelianenko has been fighting. And honestly, I didn't know Alexander Emelianenko had a fight last week. So,
well, the thing is, too, if you think about it, if he's the 10th ranked welterweight in Russia, think about Canada. We put out tons of MMA talent here.
And if you were to put the 10th-ranked Canadian welterweight up against an experienced guy like Gerald Harris, who's cut his teeth in the octagon, in the UFC, and things like that, you know, what I'm kind of surprised the odds are what they are for that reason. But Harris has always been underrated, always. That's what he's always kind of, he's kind of always been an underdog, come from behind type of guy. He's a gritty fighter, and it'll look great on his resume if he beats someone with a record like that.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely taking Harris. I think I'll go with Harris all day on this. Just also the unknown of his opponent, too. You know, you want to roll with that. I mean, there's no reason to.
Exactly. So the first fight on the main card, we're not going to get too deep into this one, but it's between a heavyweight who competed in Ryzen for a bit. 6-1, Valentin Moldavsky, and he's taken on 1-0 Ernest James. And, you know, you talk about watching fight tape and not knowing much on a fighter. 1-0 Ernest James with like one or two amateur fights, it doesn't really tell you much at all. Moldavsky,
not even Sherdog can help you out with that.
No, exactly. And Moldavsky, he's a -535 favorite in the fight. His only loss is to a top ACB heavyweight, and their heavyweight division is stacked. That was against Amir Ali Akbari. And that was by split decision in Ryzen. So if you got a split decision loss to him, that kind of means something. I mean, 3 wins by submission, 3 by decision.
Yeah.
1 is Bellator debut by decision. It's going to be a quick fight. It's going to go Moldavsky's way.
The thing is, though, at this point, I don't even see the point that Bellator is putting heavyweight bouts on any main cards.
No.
Simply because with this heavyweight Grand Prix going on, nobody else cares about anything that's happening outside of that heavyweight Grand Prix, other than maybe, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibility that Machida's Bellator debut could be at heavyweight. You never know. I mean, or something like that. Or, you know, if Nelson's out of the tournament or some of these guys who've been knocked out of the first round now, maybe they pick up fights. Like a King Mo fight might get some press, things like that. But to put these two guys on a main card when you have other fighters that need main card exposure makes so little sense to me.
Especially,
so,
yes.
You know, there's just no reason to pay attention to it for so many, you know, and that's a problem if it's a main card feature belt like that, so.
Yeah, I mean, especially when we just spent quite a bit of time talking about Gerald Harris, I mean, a former guy that was 3-1 in the UFC, and then they put him on the prelims in his home state. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be a quick fight. It's not one we're going to spend much time on. The next fight, it's a pretty competitive middleweight fight between 10-2 Chris Honeycutt and 10-1 Leo Lady. I mean, Honeycutt, he lost his last fight by decision to Lovato Jr., so good on him for not getting subbed. I mean, he's been in Bellator since 2014. And Lady, I mean, he lost against Phil Davis in his debut, and it was, 30-27s across the board. Trains out of Pedro Hizo's gym, RVT. It's a tough fight to try and pick. I mean, he's 40 years old. Honeycutt's the younger guy. He's a favorite at -170. But it should be a competitive fight nonetheless.
Yeah, I think, you know, and I kind of lean with Honeycutt just because of the age factor right now, because his opponent hasn't really shown that he's getting better with age like a lot of heavyweight fighters get, you know, things like that. It just doesn't seem to apply to him. I do like Honeycutt, but at the end of the day, if you're going to go with a guy like that, you got to understand that a guy like Honeycutt, he could lose so quickly at the drop of a hat.
Yeah.
So if you're actually gambling on this, or if you're doing anything like that, it's probably a fight that you want to stay away from.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because this is one of those unknowns that's just not worth, you know, paying to find out the known.
For sure. You know? I mean, your co-main event's probably one of the most competitive fights on this card. I mean, you've got former title challenger Eduardo Dantas, and he's taken on former UFC standout Michael McDonald. I mean, McDonald went 6-3 in the UFC. He had he challenged for the title there against Henan Barao. He had a loss to Uriah Faber, lost to John Lineker. I mean, 15 of his 18 wins are by finish. Won his Bellator debut last year. And I mean, Dantas, he's been in Bellator since 2011 when, if you go on Sherdog or Tapology, it was still considered BFC. So he's got wins over Wilson Hayes, Marcus Galvao, Joe Warren, Leandro Higo. And he lost his last fight. Obviously, that was the title challenge against Darian Caldwell. And it's kind of interesting, and I've talked about it a couple times on the podcast, and nobody else is talking about it. Darian Caldwell has a fight coming up this summer against a relatively unknown Lahat, and it's not even for the title. So I don't really know why that's main event of a card. It doesn't make any sense. It's kind of like they threw something together before the DAZN deal, and here you go.
And that's the thing that Bellator does. doesn't need to be doing stuff like that with the zone deal and everything else. If you got a champion fighting at this point, unless there's an issue with making weight, maybe his opponent can't make weight, maybe, you know, who knows. But going back to the Dontas fight, Dontas is one of those guys I've always thought that has been overshadowed. He's like a career Bellator guy almost. Well, I mean, not a career, but, you know, since 2011, that's a long time. And so he's one of these guys, though, that has kind of been overshadowed by the incoming crop of UFC stars, whether they're in his division or not. It doesn't really matter. Like, Dontas would be a lot bigger in Bellator if there wasn't this influx of UFC people coming over constantly. And it doesn't matter that they're not in his division. It doesn't matter. I mean, McDonald is a experienced, for real, you know, top-tier type contender. He could easily win this fight. And this is a very hard fight to pick, but both of these guys are guys that Bellator needs to become stars. You know what I mean? It's like they have trouble making homegrown stars, and Dontas is so close to that, but he's just never been able to get over that hump. And beating a guy like McDonald could do that. You know what I mean? Could really help him do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the fight's been put together, like, you talk Megan Anderson, Holly Holm. I think Megan Anderson was supposed to win that fight. It was a tune-up fight, then she'd fight Cyborg. In this fight, I think it's a tune-up fight for Michael McDonald, albeit it's a tough tune-up fight. I wouldn't want to have to fight Dontas. But I'm going to take McDonald in this one. I mean, he's a plus 150 underdog, actually. And it's a tough one either way. I mean, I'm a big fan of watching Dontas fights. He's a really exciting guy. And some of those bigger wins, you know, you don't see a lot of Bellator guys with wins
he's
over that type
he's
of top talent.
Fighter, yeah.
For sure. So that should be a good fight. And then we'll just move right along to the main event. You've got Canadian 11-2 champ Julia Budd. She's taking on unbeaten Brazilian Talita Nogueira. Bud's on a 9-fight win streak, only losses to Amanda Nunes and Ronda Rousey in Strikeforce. Nogueira is 7-0. All of them are finishes. I don't know what way this one could go, honestly. And I'd kind of like to get your thoughts.
I'm going to stick with Bud just based on the experience. I mean, she's the champion for a reason. But I kind of think, like, a fight like this, these are kind of the fights that she needs to win convincingly. You know what I mean? Like, she needs to defeat an opponent like this who isn't necessarily established within the division, like Nogueira isn't really established as, like, a definite threat to Bud's throne. You know, it's not there yet. So these are the types of fights that a champion, especially a champion who's going to be, you know, who's been around for a while and who could potentially continue to be a champion for a while. These are the fights they need to win to establish that type of legacy, that type of foundation within Bellator. And Julia Budd has never been able to kind of cross over into the big, 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 you know, mainstream. But I tell you, among hardcore fight fans and knowledgeable fight fans, Julia Budd, you know, is known as no joke. She's champion for a reason. I like Julia Budd in this fight. And I hope for her sake, she does it convincingly. I hope she wins convincingly because it will do a lot. For in terms of her legacy and solidifying that position in her division within Bellator.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I saw a tweet, I can't remember who it was, and I wish I did, I'd reference it, but I saw a tweet out there earlier today from a bigger news organization that said that, you know, there's always that Cyborg shadow kind of looming.
Yeah.
And it's great that Bellator has this women's featherweight division and there's a relative amount of talent there. So it could be interesting to see, you know, whether she fights out her contract with Bellator and ends up with the UFC or we ever do see a Cyborg fight down the road. So that's Bellator 202. Tomorrow night, switching gears, you've got Bellator 203 coming at you from Rome. It says on Tapology's page that it starts at 4 o'clock Eastern, and it says 8 o'clock Eastern on Bellator's page, so I would assume we're going to have a bit of tape delay there.
That seems to be, especially when out of North America.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can almost guarantee that it's going to be a tape delay.
So it's combination Bellator MMA kickboxing event. You've got three big MMA fights on the card. You've also got a few other ones that, you know, there's storylines there and people might not have found them yet. So let's start with a fighter who I think could be a star at middleweight for Bellator. You've done a lot of research on him. SBG's Will Fleury, and he's taken on 5-0 Alan Amadovsky. And so if you look at Fleury's record, exhibition, amateur, and pro, he's 12-0 with one no contest. Got a pro win over John Redmond, and people out there might be thinking, John Redmond, I've heard that name before. Yeah, he fought Charlie Ward recently, yeah, Bellator, yeah, in Ireland, and that was when Conor McGregor hopped into the cage before the fight was over, pushed referee Mark Goddard, and everything kind of ensued. Now, John Redmond, I believe his record is 7-12. It's not very good.
But I think so, yeah.
It's still a decent win, you know, to have on your record. But Fleury, he's most recently competed with EFC out of South Africa, Brave FC out of Bahrain, and we've seen, yeah, Brave FC gain more and more traction. I mean, they just hosted their first event in Europe, and main event was for one of their titles, and it had SBG's Franz Mwambo in the main event. And if you really look into it, Amadovsky's no joke. I mean, he's 5-0, all of his wins are by knockout, and he's never seen the third round of a fight. So there's no odds on the fight yet. It's kind of tough to pick, but I really think Will Fleury could be a star for Bellator.
Yeah, and yeah, I believe this is his first Bellator fight, isn't it?
Yeah,
I mean,
it is.
He's making his debut. He's won 4 straight. And while he was with Brave, he beat Tarek Suleiman, who, you know, has been around the block as well. It's tough, eh? When you see these guys coming into Bellator, especially, not just the UFC, but guys who are making their debuts, and we hear, you know, like we hear about Saki in the UFC, and there's all this buildup. In Bellator, it's a little different because you're, you know, it's kind of 1A and 1B with the UFC and Bellator. So you're not necessarily getting these top tier prospects usually. But in this case, I think Bellator is,
yeah,
getting a top guy in Will Fleury. I mean, he's got nothing but potential, but we all know making first impressions in this business is paramount to long-term success. I mean, absolutely, it's priceless. And if he doesn't go out there and, you know, do something more than even more impressive than, you know, what people have seen from Dylan Danis earlier, or, you know, other guys or whatever, he's really got to make an impression. Now, luckily, if Fleury does make an impression tonight and he does do what everybody thinks he can do, he could skyrocket towards a title shot fairly quickly,
yeah,
like this. You know what I mean? Like, it won't take long. There's not a lot of depth. So, you know, their opportunity is everywhere for this guy. I mean, the world is seriously, this fight is his for the taking, and it's not just his for the taking. I mean, this division, if he is what they think and what we think he could be, it won't be long, you know, before we're hearing things about this guy, you know, on main events, in main events, and possibly even beyond Bellator one day.
And I think what I'm going to do with this card, to be totally honest, I think whether I watch it on tape delay or it's one that I kind of, you know, you PVR it and then you watch it later, it's going to be a good fight. You just have to keep your eyes off of social media for the results. But
oh, yeah. That's tough. That's tough, man.
For sure. The fight that I'm most excited for on this card, it's a top welterweight fight. It's another one of those, I think they're kind of setting it up, and it's a tune-up, yeah, fight for the welterweight Grand Prix. But you've got perennial contender in Andre Koroshkov, who's 20-2, and he's taken on 33-17-2 Vaso Bakasevich. And
yeah,
he's 28 years old with that many pro fights. I mean, he's on a 7-fight win streak. He's had 8 fights in 2017. He's already had 3 in 2018. Listed at 5'8", he's considered a middleweight on Sherdog, but in the past year, he's fought at lightweight, welterweight, and at middleweight. So he's,
yeah,
been,
that's like big more Anthony Johnson ever went in his whole career.
Exactly.
I mean, that's a lot of divisions.
To me, he's kind of a bit of a jobber, and he's never really fought in any big organizations. And Koroshkov, I mean, his only losses are to Ben Askren and Douglas Lima. He's also,
yeah,
got wins over
two former champions.
Exactly. He's got wins over Lima, Benson Henderson, Nishan, yeah, Burl, who's in ACB right now, and most recently had a headlining knockout over Chitty Bang Bang and Joe,
yeah,
Kalani. Anyway.
I wasn't aware of the nickname.
Chitty
the thing
and Joe
is
Kalani.
With Koreshkov, he hasn't fought since beating Chitty Bang Bang in,
yep,
April of 2017.
Exactly.
And
so
he is absolutely one of the most underrated welterweights in the sport. Koreshkov. I mean, this guy is, Koreshkov is amazing when he was fighting. Like you said, he's only lost to Lima and Askren, and he's been around the block. He's got a lot of experience, but when you got that kind of ring rust, you know, coming up, I don't care who you are, that plays a factor. Obviously, he's going to be heavily favored coming into a fight like this against an opponent like this, but, you know, Koreshkov, you got to think, like you said, it's a warm-up maybe for the Grand Prix, maybe to kind of help seed him or see who he's going to be fighting in the first round. Because it's the only way to gauge what we're going to see out of him in the first round of this Grand Prix without having seen him for over a year now.
Yeah.
So, but no, I Grashkov needs to be big, and I know I've said that about every fight this card already, but he's another guy who, you know, when you're off for a year, it is what it is. You've got to make an impression coming back, even if you're Grashkov, you've got to do something.
Now, I don't know if there's been any injuries in a camp. I don't know if there's been any fights announced that couldn't happen. I don't think there has, and I've been one of the people that have said...
Not that I found out either. Yeah, not that I'm aware of.
There's a lot of fighters involved in Bellator that, you know, fights should be made. And I harp on, it just seems like every podcast I harp on it, but he's been totally outspoken. I mean, one of his teammates in Omsk, Russia, is Alexander Shlemenko, and both of them have said that, you know, we need to get more fights. I mean, Shlemenko, like we've seen, will flip-flop between Bellator and M1, so he gets more fights in, and he had a brutal knockout loss to Bruno Silva, who's a free agent right now and would be a great middleweight signing for any organization. But, I mean, you look at that fight against Njoku Ani. And like you'd said, he's one of the best welterweights in the world. So I expect him to dominate. I've watched a little bit of tape on his opponent. Not too much, but like the guy, the one thing that does make me a little nervous, I mean, practice makes perfect. And if you're fighting, how many times? 11 times in 2 years? I mean, that's not a bad thing. I mean, he wasn't getting...
No, that's a lot of action. That seems like someone who's trying to pad the bank account for retirement. And, you know, you got to get it while you can, right?
Yeah.
So you can't knock the guy's hustle for doing something like that. I mean, absolutely. But yeah, I don't know. We'll see what happens. I don't know. I'm kind of up in the air about this.
Your co-main, it's between former middleweight challenger, Italian Alessio Sicara. Most people are familiar with him. Fought in Bellator. He's fought in the UFC as well. And he's taken on 8-3 Jamie Sloan. Now, I actually did. I watched quite a bit of Jamie Sloan tape. All his wins have come by finish. His last win was over a guy who, now drum roll, was 22-72, Sean Lomas. And I mean, he destroyed him. He just got the takedown quick and got a finish. Alessio Sicara, 13 of his 19 wins are by knockout, but he's been finished in 8 of his 12 losses. And his last fight was against Rafael Carvalho, and he got knocked out. Carvalho kind of threw like a straight right, then he threw a flying knee, and he came in with an elbow and knocked him out.
But that's against a championship caliber opponent.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Exactly. Carvalho is one of the most underrated guys in MMA,
and a lot of people are overlooking him just because of his recent loss to Gegard. But I mean, I'm assuming in another fight, and I think rightly so, that Sicara is kind of being set up for a win in his home country. But if the fight does go to the ground, it'd be a little difficult to pick Sicara in that one. So it could be a close one, but I think Sicara is going to be able to pull away with him.
I'm going with Sicara too. And again, Sloan's another guy who's making his Bellator debut.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like every card we got, how many guys from Bellator just making their debuts, which is great. But is when your most recent action is in Phoenix MMA, which I believe is UK based.
Yeah.
And you fight a guy, like you said, Sean Lomas or, you know, things like that. And you're not going to be okay. You're not going to have the experience and the edge and the cardio and the whole package to put it together against an experienced vet like Sicara. Alessio Sicara, and you got to assume Sicara is going to be a little bit more, you know, he's going to be amped. He's going to be at his best because he's fighting on home soil. And let's face it, that doesn't happen very often. There's not too many big time MMA cards that go to Italy. So, you know, I'm rolling with Sicara for sure. I'm not sure. I don't know. I got a feeling it's going to be one of those eked out decisions. You know, but I still think he's going to get the win, definitely. And it's just, with so many guys making their debuts like this, it's so hard to gauge what you're going to get when you have a veteran who's kind of been a journeyman. You know, he hasn't been in the UFC since, 2013, I think, Sicara?
Yeah.
And you got him going against a guy like Sloan who's never been at this level before. You really, I mean, you're kind of throwing it up in the air, but you got to lean on experience and the guy in home soil and, you know, common sense rolls with Sicara in this fight for sure.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. And luckily, our main event of the night, you got the featherweight belt on the line between Patricio Pitbull and Daniel Vaichel. And just to kind of backtrack a bit, their first fight was at Bellator 138, ended in a Pitbull knockout. And I was just kind of cruising around on YouTube watching some of the older Bellator promo videos and after the fight. And one of the fighters, believe it or not, I said when I had Josh Gross on the podcast yesterday that I've been watching a lot of Pancras and a lot of Sakuraba videos. But another fighter that I've been really interested lately is Ken Shamrock. Both of the Shamrocks. And so I've watched a lot of Ken Shamrock tapes. So if you look at Bellator 138, Justin Lawrence was on the card, Michael Chandler fought Derek Campos. Daniel Strauss got a win. Bobby Lashley beat Dan Charles. And then the main event after the Pitbull fight was...
Shamrock Kimbo?
Yeah, it was Shamrock Kimbo. Yeah.
Oh, no. Like, yeah, that's probably one of Bellator's best cards.
Yeah, ever. Exactly.
I mean, yeah, that was a good... I'm a big Shamrock guy myself because when I first started loving and knowing what the UFC was, you could go rent... We never, you know, could get the satellite because the pay-per-views knew I had satellite back in the early 90s, first of all. But anyways, I remember going to the video store and renting the UFC fights on VHS and Ken Shamrock and Hoyce Gracie. And I loved, you know, being Irish, obviously I leaned towards Ken Shamrock, but his stance, I was going there with the open hands, you know, and the diagonal stance. And I saw him the other day on the Fight Network, he was beating some guy up with boxing gloves. You know, the guy had gloves. Hey, Shamrock is a great, great fighter to watch. Super entertaining, you know. But, yeah, that's a heavy compliment, you know, to say that, though. That, you know, kind of Shamrock-esque. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's what I've been into anyway with my research. I've been watching a lot of Ken Shamrock as well, Frank Shamrock. I think Frank Shamrock's one of the most underrated fighters of all time. I mean, he was super competitive in the UFC, bounced around in organizations and always found success and somewhat overlooked. But back to Pitbull.
Who do you think you have though tonight between Pitbull and Weichel? Because honestly, Pitbull has more to lose in my opinion than Weichel.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like,
yep.
Pitbull has way more to lose than and if he loses, Weichel is gonna definitely be considered, you know, that's going to be such a bump to his resume. You kind of have to throw him in the mix maybe for the Grand Prix.
Well, I mean, or yeah, something. When you look at it, so if you look at Weichel's, if you look at his, you know, 4-fight win streak he's been on, he's got a win over Georgie Karakanyan, who I'm really high on, and Emmanuel Sanchez. Yeah. And those two guys are polar opposites stylistically. Emmanuel Sanchez is great standing up. He can finish the fight by submission like we saw in his last fight. Georgie Karakanyan likes to take the fight to the ground, and then he dominates. I mean, in his last fight at ACB, I think it was ACB 88, he took his opponent down and he held him in a lock, and everybody compared him to Khabib Nurmagomedov, the way he was fighting in that fight. So polar opposites, and Weichel has wins over both of them. If you look at his losses, I mean, significant losses to Dan Hardy, Paul Daly, and Thiago Tavares. That was in 2006, 2007, 2008. None of them matter. So,
yeah.
I mean, he's had a great run here recently. You know, if you look, his only finish in those four fights was against Brian Moore, who does fight out of SBG. But that guy's never fought top talent. I mean, he's also got a loss to AJ McKee. So, all in all, I expect Pitbull to retain the title. I think it's going to be an entertaining fight for sure. But
he's another guy, though, who hasn't fought.
No, and that's true. And the big, you know, kind of storyline coming into this one, and I had a bit of back and forth on Twitter with some writers, but Pitbull's big plan, and both of their plan, is to fight everyone out of SBG. And I think, realistically... And we talk about strange matchmaking. So on that Darian Caldwell card, I believe James Gallagher is going to be fighting on that card. And he hasn't fought in a long time. He sustained two big injuries, two knee injuries. And so I think realistically, if Pitbull wins and Gallagher wins in a month or so, I think that's going to set up a title fight between them. And, you know, there's some storylines to make. But, yeah, I think Pitbull is going to win this fight.
Yeah, well, he's only 2-2 in his last four fights. And... one of those losses was to Benson Henderson, who he is not what he even close.
Exactly.
To what he was.
Yep.
And so Benson Henderson's name now is worth more than Benson Henderson actually is as a fighter. So that's a tough, tough loss to stomach. But again, he hasn't fought in over a year. What, since April 2017?
Yep.
And so that means his Henderson loss, I mean, it was before that, I can't remember the exact date, I think it was late 2016 Henderson loss.
Yeah.
So that was quite a while ago, so you got to think that, you know, he's reset and things like that. A big fight for both, but like I said, Pitbull's got way more to lose in my opinion. So I do like him to win this fight, but, you know, he's going out there with a lot on the line.
For sure, and that just about does for Bellator 203. And then also Saturday night, not on tape delay, from Boise, Idaho. It looks like a smaller arena. Kind of reminds me of whether, you know, a fight night in Halifax or what we have coming up in Moncton, although that's a brand new arena.
Well, when they went to Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
Exactly.
And places like that, you know. It is. But honestly, on paper anyways, it's easily one of the year's most, it's easily one of the year's best pre-cards from UFC.
For sure.
On paper. And it could potentially be one of the year's best cards that we've seen so far.
So,
just because of the potential.
As far as that goes, what are some of the matchups that you kind of want to preview? Some of the ones that people should definitely check out.
Well, I first, you know, I think Katz and Gano is a big storyline. Just because when you come into your career and you start 2-0 in the UFC with wins over Misha Tate and Amanda Nunes, you know, two former, one current, one former champion, and you show so much promise, and then you lose. She lost to Rousey by submission. You know, she was one of Rousey's many first-round victims with that arm bar. I think Kat Zingano was so much more than what we saw in Rousey. But then again, you know, she's lost three straight fights at this point. That is so damaging to your resume when you're trying to mount a charge at a title shot where she believes she should be. And honestly, she could be there if she puts it all together. She is one of the top, you know, bantamweights. I don't know if she has any interest in fighting the women's featherweight division. I haven't heard her express any interest, but that would be an opportunity you'd think that she could take advantage of if things don't work out in this kind of, it's kind of increasingly crowded women's bantamweight division. But when she lost to Vieira in her last fight, that I was disappointed with that performance just because, you know, she needed that win. And she's lost to Julia Pena in that run as well. And this three-fight loss, you know, this losing streak she's been experiencing right now. And I don't, you know, I say it all over and over again, oh, you got to make an impression, got to make an impression. But when you lose three straight, you got to kind of wonder, I don't know her current contract status.
Yeah.
But three straight losses in the UFC often leads to the chopping block.
Yeah.
You know, like that, you know, I'm not saying they're going to chop a big name like Zingano because she's so prominent despite her recent record. But it'll be interesting to see where the UFC goes if she doesn't do well on Saturday. But I think definitely the return of not only her, but Chad Mendes. I mean, well, Zingano's obviously not returning. She just lost to Pierre. But the return of Chad Mendes is also a massive storyline heading into Saturday night's fight. You know, he was a force in the featherweight division. He's been gone for a while, so I'm interested to hear your thoughts on Chad Mendes.
I kind of expressed him a little bit yesterday, and I'll get deeper into it today. So, I mean, Chad Mendes, he was off for, what, over 2 years due to USADA suspension for, I believe it was HGH. I don't think it was steroids.
Yeah, I think it was. I think it was.
And he's taken on Miles Jury, who, it, you know, quiet rise in the featherweight division. A lot of people are kind of low on him right now. I'm not. I mean, he's ranked 12 for a reason. So if you look at Mendes, I mean, those last two losses, they were definitely rough losses against Conor McGregor and Frankie Edgar, and you can't take anything from them there. Those are two top guys in the division.
And Jose Aldo was his other third loss that he had.
Yeah.
So he's lost to top-tier guys.
For sure. And so, I mean, Miles Jury, he's got a win on his record over Rick Glenn, who's fighting higher up on the card than him. And Chad Mendes, there's been pictures of him going around on Twitter and a few different articles out there that, I mean, he bulked way up to 170. He had an interview with Kevin Ioli, I guess, of Yahoo Sports. So he bulked way up. I mean, your weigh-ins are going to be today. I haven't seen too many of the results just yet, but hopefully he's able to make the weight. And then at the same time, Miles Jury has a huge height and reach advantage over him. So I think he's going to be able to outpoint him. And if Chad Mendes gets too aggressive and goes in there too quick, he could get caught with something. So I've actually got Miles Jury to win this fight. I know a lot of people aren't going to agree with me, but I've got him in that fight.
I do agree with you. I do. I think Jury is going to take advantage of that promising striking game we saw early on before he lost to Cerrone. And I forget who the second loss that Jury lost to consecutive. Oliveira.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, yeah, Cerrone and Oliveira. And those two losses really derailed that early promise we saw from Jury. And you're right. Everybody kind of just dropped on him after those two losses. They were like, but, you know, he is the 12th ranked contender in his division, and that reach advantage, we've seen some, you know, he's been around in the UFC for, he's not a new guy anymore. He's been, what,
2012.
Yeah. Oh, wow. See, exactly. 6 years. He doesn't look like he's old enough to be around there for 6 years. But the thing is that coming up against Gag Mendes, you know he's going to be rusty. So what's a rusty guy going to do? He's going to lean on his comfort zone, which is wrestling.
Yeah.
He's going to try to, take Jury down. He's going to try to, just neutralize Jury's striking game by going in and hoping. So we got to basically hope, if you're going for Jury, that Jury's takedown defense is on point, and that you got to think that Jury's been preparing for that type of, you know, bout. But I do like Jury in this fight. And let me just say, Chad Mendes was such a force in the featherweight division, and regardless of what happens on Saturday, I don't see him returning to be, you know, a force in the division again. He couldn't get past Frankie Edgar, McGregor, whatever, that's fine. But even today's featherweight division, the Holloways and the Ortegas and the Cub Swansons and the way all these guys are fighting like that, I don't think Chad Mendes fits into the featherweight top 10 at all in terms of, you know, where he is today.
Yeah, for sure. And you had talked about Kat Zingano, Marion Renault. I've got a differing opinion than seemingly everyone else. I've actually got Renault to win this fight. I mean, Kat Zingano lost in 2015, then one fight in 2016. She lost to Juliana Pena, which I don't know if Pena was still, I don't know if she was still training out west in Washington or if she had made her move yet to Illinois, but that move kind of screwed her up a little bit and sent her on a different path. I know she's a lot happier with it, but it wasn't a great move. So lost to those two, and then in 2017 to Vieira. And I read yesterday that it was rumored that Vieira and Holly Holm might fight for an interim bantamweight title if the Nunes...
I heard that too.
If the Nunes-Cyborg fight
myself.
Yeah, ends up materializing. And if you look at Renault's last fight, I mean, Sarah McMahon, she seemed to be learning and changing her game a little bit, but her ground game still wasn't there, and Renault was able to capitalize on it. So
yeah, and Sarah McMahon's no joke.
No, exactly.
Too, so yeah, you're absolutely right. And the thing is, Renault has been active. She's been doing much better than Zingano's coming in there. And you know, you got to wonder, to be fair, let's be honest though, Zingano, to be fair, has gone through a lot of personal stuff too.
Yep.
A lot of personal loss that would cripple people, I know.
Yep.
And so she struggled with that. I know that's taken away from her time in the gym training. I know for a fact it has. It's caused her to be inconsistent in terms of how often she's competing and things like that. So, you know, you can't count her out.
No, for sure.
Renault is underrated and has to be taken seriously. And I'm sure you and I both agree that Zingano is not overlooking.
No.
She just doesn't do that. She's too intelligent, or she's too aware of what's going on. So, yeah, but I don't necessarily, like, I didn't say really Zingano's going to win. I think she has to win. She needs to win for herself, for momentum building, for her own confidence. You know, she dropped a split. Anytime you lose a split decision in your last fight, that's tough just because it's a split decision.
Yeah.
But losing to Vieira, thing is, Zingano thinks of herself as an elite women's bantamweight contender, and deservedly so in some respects, but we got to start seeing the results in the octagon, or otherwise, what are we doing here?
Yeah, so, for sure. You
know, yeah, so no, I like your analysis on it. I think you're right, Bruno. Look out for that girl, because she's no joke, too, and yeah. Great win over Zingano would do a lot for her career, despite Zingano's recent struggles as well.
100%. I mean, and there's still more, you know, exciting fights on the card. You get Dennis Bermudez and Rick Glenn. I mean, I said yesterday, I think that one's pretty cut and dry. I think Rick Glenn's going to run away with it. I mean, Dennis Bermudez, yeah, he's got that pedigree. Big wins, big fights in the past. I mean, a split decision to Darren Elkins, that one's no joke. I mean, Darren Elkins has totally reinvented himself and kind of come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And it's a shame that he's being overlooked.
One of the things about Darren Elkins these days.
Yeah, it's a shame he's being overlooked.
Guys, and we're talking about him.
He's on the prelims. I mean, 6-fight win streak going into that one. But, I mean, lost to Andre Feely. Andre Feely's pretty one-dimensional fighter. And Rick Glenn, I mean, former World Series of Fighting Championship. And he knocked out Georgie Karakanyan, who I mentioned earlier in the Bellator analysis. Like, stylistically, a guy who's pretty similar to Dennis Bermudez in a lot of different ways with great takedowns and ground game there. So I've got Rick Glenn in that. He's got a huge height and reach advantage, 6 inches of height, 4 of reach. And, I mean, last time he fought a smaller opponent, like I said, Karakanyan, but Gavin Tucker, you know, local guy. And hopefully he's able to take part in UFC Moncton, but, I mean, he just destroyed him in that fight. I mean, it was...
Bermudez is dragging a 3-fight losing streak into this fight.
Yeah.
And he used to be such a force, you know, like at least within the... You know, he was relevant, let's just say. And he was definitely a top-10 guy for a while. And you're right, he's that's just kind of gone now. You know, he's not at all what he was. He's definitely... fighting, I don't know if he's at the point where he might even be cut at this, you know, I don't know the current status of his UFC contract, but you got to kind of wonder, because with that division filling up as fast as it is and with so much talent coming out of there, it's getting crowded. And a guy like Bermudez, you know, but again, for Glenn too, I believe, didn't Rick Glenn lose to a jury?
Miles Jury? Yep.
And, you know, so losing to a guy like Miles Jury, you know, like he's 12th ranked contender, that's fine, whatever. But beating Bermudez probably won't negate that loss to a jury. So he's going to, Rick Glenn's got a journey ahead of him. He's only 2-2. Is he 2-2 in his, yeah, 2-2 in his last four fights?
Yeah.
Which isn't spectacular. It's mediocre at best. And he's 2-2 in the UFC overall, I believe. And so coming off, you know, coming into a fight like Bermudez, it's just win, move forward. Doesn't need to be spectacular. Doesn't need to be. Just get the job done. And I do like Glenn in this. And I think this could be maybe one of the last times we see Bermudez, depending on the current contract and status, if he isn't successful on Saturday. But I like Glenn as well.
Yeah, no, totally agree with you there. I mean, your last two fights on the card. Now, whether or not that one's co-main or not, I mean, UFC website versus what Tapology and Sherdog say, who knows? But you've also got Super Sage Northcutt and Zach Otto. And I had said yesterday, I mean, and I'll say it from the outset here, I think Zach Otto is going to be able to run away with a win here. I mean, he's 3-2 in the UFC.
What?
Knocked out Mike Pyle in his last fight, which doesn't mean a whole lot. I mean, it was kind of a shame. It was Mike Pyle's retirement fight.
Gamer, though. Mike Pyle's a tough guy. Yep. Good chin. He's been around the block. So.
And I mean, Sage Northcutt, he got a loss to Brian Barbarena. That's kind of, I mean, I know he's matured and he's changed the way he trains. He's at a totally different camp. He's no longer, I
was with TriStar. Now he's a Team Alpha Male.
Yeah, I'm going to have to, just a second here. So, we're doing our interview, whatever, and then I didn't mute out my my ending noise, and we went past the end of the last episode, and it started playing my headphones, so I got carried away there.
So, where do we have to start from?
Lost to Barbarena. Yeah, that one's tough. So, he changed training camps, and I mean, I understand that. He's at, what, Team Alpha Male now, right? So
yeah, and that's a solid place for him to be as well. He's a Texas kid, but being under Uriah Faber, I'm telling you, Uriah Faber is going to turn into one of these amazing coaches.
Exactly.
And Sage Northcutt is in the right place.
Yep.
He was saying, you know, at lightweight, he's 5-0 as a lightweight, and he's 0-2 as a welterweight. So some people say, what the heck is this kid doing? But you got to remember, he came into the UFC as, 18, 19, 20-year-old kid.
Yeah.
No experience at this level whatsoever. He's been fighting combat sports his whole life. We know he was the Karate Kid type, you know, cover of magazines when he was a kid and all that. So, yes, he's definitely lived a life of combat. However, we forget sometimes because of how physically talented he is, how young he is. And because he's so young and his body is what it is, I mean, the guy is a sculpture, the walking sculpture. When you rip like that, and you've been ripped like that for years so long, your body develops differently. And his body has gone through changes now that make a cut to 155 unhealthy, impossible. And I'm glad that he stood up and said, you know what, despite the fact that I've lost both of my fights at 170 pounds, I cannot get my body to sweat and release the weight like I needed it to cut to 155. It's not safe anymore. I'm at Team Alpha Male, so I'm going to go to welterweight. We need more of this to cut out this ridiculous weight cutting that puts guys in the hospital and cancels fights and makes videos like the Cyborg horror video and all that stuff. And it's things like this where Sage Northcutt voluntarily says, no, I don't care if I've lost both my fights at 170. I'm going to go fight at 170. And I know you and other people, it seems like everybody's so quick to step on Sage Northcutt and say, yeah, he's going to lose, he's going to lose, he's going to lose. I love this kid. Simply because he is pure MMA innocence in so many ways. What you see is what you get from him. He's got no ulterior motives. He's intelligent. He's hardworking. And, you know, people, I don't know if everybody knows this, but when he first started his active UFC career, not only was he not in a regular gym, he was just being trained by his father before trying out at TriStar, kind of going to TriStar to test the waters out there. But he was a full-time student at Texas A&M, I believe. And it wasn't some joke, you know, Johnny Manziel type courses or whatever. It was, he was an engineering student, I think, petroleum engineering or something like that. This kid has everything, you know, he needs to be a very successful adult. And think about it, he's 23 years old. He could be like, in terms of length of career, he could, you know, LeBron James, not success, but LeBron James in terms of how long he actually is going to be around if guys are fighting into their 40s. And we know he takes care of himself. Now, one of those losses, I can't remember which one it was. It might have been the Barbarina loss. He took on short notice. I can't remember which one it was. So, you know, you can't really whatever. Now, his opponent is no joke. That's the thing. You know, he's coming. He's getting a very tough test. And so we have to assume that this is really his first full camp at welterweight.
Yeah.
This is going to be like his first real, real, real test to see what we're really going to get from him moving forward at 175 or 170 pounds. So I like it. I think it's a great move, and I'm going to back Super Sage, and I don't care. Hate on me, good. Super Sage needs his Canadian support, so that's what I'm backing. Definitely Super Sage.
Best thing about him is, I mean, he threw out the emo Sage when he fought Mickey Gall, and that was kind of entertaining, but the guy's always got a good... He's always got, you know, he's always positive.
A smile on his face, first of all.
Always got a smile on his face. I think Otto's going to take it. I mean, he's got 10 wins by submission, and that's going to be ultimately Sage's downfall. And I mean, Team Alpha Male, that's great. You're going to have great training partners there. You're definitely going to be working your takedown defense and your ground game. But we're going to have differing opinions there. So, main event, return of Junior Dos Santos, taking on Blagoy Ivanov. And I mean, I see this fight a different way than a lot of people see it. Ivanov, 16-1-1. I mean, the only loss is to Alexander Volkov, who's now a force in the UFC. And honestly, I wasn't sold on Volkov when he came into the UFC. I thought Bellator heavyweight championship, that doesn't mean too much. He didn't fight great talent. M1 heavyweight champion.
Not then.
M1 champ, that doesn't mean too much. But Blagoy, he's got wins over Josh Copeland, Sean Jordan, Rico Rodriguez, who's a name.
And he beat Fedor in a Sambo, World Sambo Championship. He beat Fedor in 2008.
2008, which still made...
Championship.
Yeah, that's still...
Well, that's no joke. I mean, that's his background in Sambo.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
I mean, and we've seen, Khabib uses a little bit of Sambo, doesn't he?
Yeah, and it's still, it still holds relevance where it was 2008.
Oh, yeah.
And Fedor still, I guess he was never a big, strong guy, but he's still a force.
Yeah, but in 2008 as well, Fedor was Fedor.
Yeah, exactly.
Something in itself.
Won a fight in Japan with two broken hands. And then I had mentioned yesterday, there's a Bellator promo video before one of his fights in 2014 where they explain how he did get stabbed in the heart. He was in an 86-day coma. And then he came back a year and a half later and just started winning again. So
that's pretty gangster to be able to come back from that. You know, and he's won five straight fights coming into his UFC debut. Isn't it his debut tonight? Yeah, obviously,
yeah.
Right? And you imagine coming into your UFC debut against a guy, a monster like Junior Dos Santos. But the thing is, not only is he debuting against Dos Santos, and just everything that comes with that, but, Dos Santos is in a very desperate position. He only fought once a year since, I believe, 2014.
Yeah.
And JDS is not what we saw. That loss to Miocic. He got knocked out in the first round, and that was his last fight, and that was in March of 2017. So he's another guy. Yeah, God, it seems like the theme this week, debuts and people who haven't fought in over a year. You know, it seems like a theme this week, both with Bellator and the UFC, because JDS is another guy who hasn't fought in over a year. He's going to be carrying some Octagon rust into a fight that I think is going to be a lot tougher for him than people are expecting. I don't know if JDS can ever get back to what he was. I think the division maybe has moved a little bit beyond his abilities because he's had injuries and he's been so inconsistent and so unable to be what he is. I think at best, defeating or winning this main event at best maybe buys JDS another main event or two outside of North America.
Yeah.
But moving forward, I really see Dos Santos, unfortunately, because he's such an exciting fighter to watch, man. He's got lightning in his hands. But moving forward, he's going to be like a gatekeeper, like a stepping stone. I really think one of these guys who, well, look, kind of what he's doing on Saturday.
Yeah.
I like him to win, but I'm going to take it by decision, and it's going to be close.
Yeah, for sure.
That's my choice for Saturday's main event. I'll probably regret it, but I'm going to lean on that just because he's got so much experience against so many tough guys.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Mean,
but yeah, JDS is definitely what I'm rolling with.
Yeah, makes total sense, and that pretty much does it for UFC Boise. And I mean, I'd really like to thank you for coming on again. It was great having you earlier on in the week, and I'm sure we'll have you on again soon.
All right, my pleasure. I'll be on call for you guys.
Awesome. Thanks so much. All right. Awesome to have Ty back on the podcast. I really appreciate him coming on. We broke down Bellator 202, 203, and then we focused a little bit more on UFC Boise. And I like to do that just simply for the fact, I mean, it's a really big event this year. It's kind of flying under the radar. And I hope you guys really appreciate just a different look at getting the analysis there. And I mentioned that with Ty on the show. I mean, we had Jose yesterday. I love to have different guests with different opinions and just different ways of thinking about fighting. So with that, that does it for episode 28 of the podcast. Hopefully you catch it on iTunes and Stitcher. And follow me on Twitter at Fight Night Picks so you can get all the different news and coverage of the events this weekend. So we'll see you back again on Monday when we've got two really big guests coming on.